Hello and welcome to Fresh Pressed, a podcast to talk about everything juicing. Industry discussions, stories, advice. This is the show for anyone looking to learn more about the cidery and cold press business. I'm your host for today, Alex, and we're going to be talking to the Canadian Cider Association Executive Director, Barry Rook. We'll discuss the ins and outs of the Canadian cider market and offer listeners what Barry sees in the future of the cider industry in Canada. So be sure to listen all the way through for all his great insights. Hey Barry, how you doing?
Happy to connect here. So
let's start it off with thank you for joining, taking the time, and giving us all these great insights that I'm sure you're about to give us.
Exactly. It's really happy to be here, and it's always I do a lot of podcasts, not only personally for one of the side cider projects, which got me into cider, but I also do podcasting for radio and all of that kind of stuff. So it's always good to be able to chat.
Awesome. Why don't you start off with giving us a little bit about yourself pre-cider, Canadian Cider Association, and then what led you to joining?
So I started sort of getting interested in cider when I met my now wife. We would essentially go out to a bar or whatnot, and I didn't drink beer at the time. This is 10 plus years ago, and started to, you know, it's hard to share a pitcher of coolers or something of that nature. And we kind of discovered cider, Strongbow, Somersby, you know, the pretty typical paths that are available. And then when one time we went out, we came across this cider production called County Cider, Wapus. And it was way better and different than anything else, and started to sort of do a little bit of a look into, well, what's there. Fast forward a year or two later, I got an opportunity to move to Ottawa to run a national association around radio. So that's what my day job is radio. And when we moved here, we didn't really know anybody or anything of that nature. And we noticed there was a gap in the cider industry in Ontario. At that point, there was about 50 or so cider producers, and nobody was covering it. Since I had a background in broadcasting and covering all those types of different things, we decided to start doing reviews and social media posts, and we launched what's called the Cider Crate. It currently has over 750 different ciders that are reviewed and cataloged and categorized. From Ontario and all around the world. Reviews from bars, then it grew to, we built a map of all the cider producers in Ontario, then we built a map of all the cider producers in the country, and we would go on tours and visit everybody, and just kind of kept growing and growing as a hobby. Around the summer of 2020, when we had our first lull in COVID and things reopened in the area, I learned about this thing called excise duty, federal tax that's put into place for cider producers or anybody who produces alcohol or other fun products, and found out that it was going to sort of become in place and required for cider producers. So since we had a map of every cider producer in the country, simply sent out a survey saying, hey, I run a radio association. I know how to run associations. There's no cider association. Is this something that interests you? We've got about 100 responses, and all but two said, yeah, national association, I think, would be great. So we simply started up a national association in that sense. And I drafted the bylaws and policies and did the paperwork. We found a startup board of directors. They were in place until last March, and then we had our first formally elected board of directors this past March, and we're sort of in year three or so now of the whole process.
So what do you think, what does it offer right now, and what is the big picture for you? You're 10 years in, or five, you know, it's well funded and running.
Yeah, the catalyst to get it started was obviously that excise duty. And we were lucky enough to be able to have cider and mead pulled out from the definition, and as a result, it was not applicable to them. So, you know, we saved $15 to $20 million a year for cider producers in new taxes that were coming into play. So, huge win right off the top, which is great. And then what we're working on now are what are those things that we can offer or that we need to look at doing that help cider producers. And essentially, we understand that we're one of a few associations. We're the federal side of things, so we're trying to be cross-country. We are trying to work as close as possible with our provincial association partners, and they've been fantastic when it comes to getting information out and sharing it and support and all of that. And we're trying to figure out how to best collaborate with them. Then from that standpoint, it's really just been, well, what is it that a national association can do to help? So we're looking at services, a variety of different things. So we have, obviously, Juicing Systems was our first partner that we teamed up with, and it provides, you know, an opportunity for members of ours to know and get better access to equipment production, right? And all those services that you offer. So we saw that was a really important benefit partnership in place. So we started figuring out, well, what else do cider producers need? So we are working with two organizations that do training, human resources, an insurance company, three or four different consultants. And we've sort of packaged all these as member benefits. So if you are a member of Cider Canada, you get access to these, whether it's discounted or bonus prices, whether it's specialty services designed specifically for cider producers, all those types of things. So that's a bit of what we've been focusing on so far. And we're really happy to have a nice collection of a variety of different programs and services there. And then as we look forward, we're trying to figure out what our members want. So we're exploring training and education opportunities. We're partnered right now with the American Cider Association for CiderCon, which is exciting down in Chicago this year. And we're trying to help bring more Canadian producers to learn. Down the road, does that mean maybe we're looking at having our own conference? There's a possibility there. And then other things like export, larger awareness of products available across the country and internal and external of the country. We're looking at awards, trying to figure out really what it is that any cider producer would be looking for that we can help make it easier for them to do their work. So that's sort of where we started and now where we're looking at going as well.
Could it be summarized as everything that's maybe too expensive for maybe starting up or mid-sized cider producers that could need to grow faster or grow better?
Yeah, or in some cases, right size. We've seen that happen with the market as well, especially with the introduction of more people moving towards like ready-to-mix drinks and seltzers and all that kind of stuff, especially in 2011 or 2021, that did take a hit on cider production, which in 2020 was quite growing. So it's really just about trying to find ways, big, small, amateur or not, because we're looking at adding a tier for amateur cider producers to join as well, so that they have access to information and services that help them do what they're doing. Whether it's, again, that small individual who's learning and wants to start something, or, you know, the big names, the No Boats on Sunday, the growers, etc., who, you know, have large share portion of the country, but they obviously are still in need of something else and they're heavily involved in the cider industry itself. So we're really happy that our whole network kind of covers that whole thing. And if you're licensed to produce cider provincially in Canada, you can become a member. And essentially, if you produced cider for Canada as the primary market, then you can be a member of Cider Canada. So we want to be as open and inclusive as possible with everybody.
Do you have any, it's kind of hard general advice, but any advice for businesses starting, want to look into producing their own cider? Maybe it's an orchard that have too much waste and they're saying, well, we're going to get getting pushed down by the grocery stores. We want to make our own product. Do you have any general advice that you could give for those first few steps?
Yeah. First, join the association. Yeah. Whether it's ours or a provincial association, I think it's really valuable. The second thing is the cider industry in Canada is incredibly collaborative. You know, we saw growth of cider producers in the last 5 years at or faster than the craft beer market was growing 20 years ago. So we are seeing a lot of people entering the market when the competition for selling is not quite there. It's really about the discoverability of a product. So what that means is a lot of people are really happy to help, whether it's formally as a consultant, informally as someone who tried the product and said, this is good, this is bad, or something in between. And that's always been one of the big things that I've noticed in the industry here is that it's incredibly collaborative and very social, more so than, like I said, wine, beer, and spirits, just because of the nature of you're not competing with each other, you're competing with more so trying to develop the drinking angle. The other thing I would say is try to make sure that you're coming into it with an understanding that it's not going to be easy. There is going to be a lot of physical labor. There's going to be a lot of capital that's necessary. And you have to plan for it. You can't just go, I've got a whole bunch of extra apples. Let's convert the front of the garage here, buy some things and start selling. That might work for you to move product. Is it going to get you to a point where you're sustainable and you're not living off of sort of blood and sweat to get through the process? Probably not. And that was one of the research areas that OMAFRA, which is the Ontario sort of agricultural group, did a study a couple of years ago that said you can be successful at small or large. The mid-range is incredibly difficult because of economies of scale to be successful. You can't just use elbow grease to grind your way through it. And the high-end stuff, obviously, you're talking about costs overall, and you've already got that flow. And that middle range is really a challenge. And I don't think a lot of cider producers understand that you can kind of get to a point and get stuck in it. And that's where, you know, hopefully what we're providing and the network that's being built helps to push further and further. So I would say those are the types of things that are really important as starting. Not nearly as important as the product. And obviously, the product itself will range. There are some well-selling ciders that are quite poor. There are some great unknown ciders that just don't reach the market. And it's sort of like any other industry of that nature. It's you have to match the business with the craft. And that's really what I think, you know, being aware of both of those angles is incredibly important. If you focus on one or the other, you're going to also have a little bit more trouble too.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. You can have the best tasting cider in the world. No one knows about it. You don't know how to run the operations and it's just not going to go anywhere.
Exactly. And personally, one of my favorite ciders around is located in Prince Edward County. It's a small vineyard that makes it. It's called Cold Creek Vineyards. They grow grapes for a winery, and then they do barrel-aged ciders, small, little, tiny batch runs of it. It is absolutely incredible, and very few know about it. It's very hard to get a hold of, but, you know, that's that angle of, is that hobby? Is that craft? Is that trying to make a living off of that type thing? And that's also a great part of the way that the industry works is there are so many points in which there's possibilities of, you know, entry and being involved that you can be within the industry as well. So if you do want to make it out of your garage, you absolutely can do that. And there are a handful of cider producers that obviously started that way and have moved and grown, and others are super happy with, you know, the place that they've gotten themselves to, and their, you know, it's their weekend and evening projects outside of their normal 9-to-5.
So I think you kind of already said it, but I want to reiterate it. Then deciding what kind of business you are planning to make, right? Is it going to be a hobby? Is it going to be, are you looking at another revenue stream, and how much do you need that? Because depending on the size, like you said, depends how much you're making revenue wise and how much investment you have to put in to grow to get to that that size that you need to get to, right?
Absolutely. Exactly that, where you need to, at some point, if you're going to move from a hobby to a industry and to sort of a job in that sense, that's trying to create enough revenue for you to be sustainable, you've got to have all those other things in place. And if you want to do it as a hobby, that's great. And that's the amazing thing about cider is you could go ahead and do it as a fun hobby for friends and for personal consumption. And once you make that jump to sales, that's where you really have to, like any business, start thinking about what are the things that will make this tick and how do we make it successful? Or else you may find yourself just swimming, constantly trying to tread water, and not getting anywhere closer to where you're trying to go.
Where do you see the market moving towards? Are we seeing more cider makers trying to get that beer market, that beer customer, or are we seeing more people going towards, you know, the wine market and a little more refined, better marketing and all that kind of stuff?
It ebbs and flows. I think the example of the seltzers was really interesting. Cider had this sort of 5-7 year surge. So when we started first covering it for the Cider Crate in 2015, we mapped it out. There were about 50 cider producers in the province. We're sitting at 130 now in Ontario alone. So there's a huge jump in the number of people that got into the market. And again, that's good and bad. It causes some challenges. And of course, some have closed. And some of it is, oh, we're a brewery, but we keep getting asked, why don't we have a cider? So they're contracting in ciders. Or we're a winery and we've got this space when the grapes aren't available and our product is sort of sitting there. So why not make a batch of cider in that and have it as another offering? So there's all sorts of those sort of different angles that can be looked at. And it really depends, again, on, you know, what your focus is and where those producers want to sort of take things. When it comes to where we're going, I believe drinking numbers is around 4%. 4 is very low for total alcohol consumption. And we're still very much in the discoverability phase of cider in Canada. Again, it was essentially completely wiped out before in the 80s, and a whole bunch of the cider trees were actually pulled out in Ontario to make way for other products. So now we're starting to see a resurgence of people growing these new varieties, getting these new apples in place that are more designed for cider, even if it is a 3 to 5 year process. And so we're starting to see that more creativity and so on. So I think the future allows for a few opportunities. I think we're sort of maxing out as a whole with the number of cider producers in the country that can be sustainable. I don't think going beyond 450, 500 at this time with their consumption rates is, or we'll run into the same issue that beer is having in Canada, where we're seeing more breweries closed than open. We're not there for cider, but we definitely have seen a slowdown. Whether the excise duty was part of that because people were concerned about putting money into development opportunities and so on is another thing that was a possibility too. But there's, you know, I think there's still opportunity to continue to showcase what really good product is, and that will, I think, drive more people towards the offerings that are there. I think we're seeing the tail end of the seltzer spritzer type thing, and I think what is next? I wish I knew. I would be a little bit better off financially if that was the case. If I could make, you know, decent cider, that is. So.
Yeah, that went into my next question. We'll raise what we see for the next 5 years coming. So you hit a little bit on, there was a big boom in the business, in the industry, and we're seeing a little bit of a plateau. Is that how you see it as well? Like, yeah, maybe it's, we don't know. Is it the economy? Is it this? Is it market capped? Like, it's just more of a waiting game. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, the pandemic has put some curves into things. I think the plateau is around that because a lot of people sort of raced to enter the market and did so between 2016 and 2020. The pandemic may have scared a couple people off as they go forward, but also it did change consumption habits, right? People had to make a huge decision. If you're producing at and selling mostly to restaurants, suddenly the pandemic hits and your revenue's gone. What happens to all of that? So there was even, you know, the extra costs of having that happen. And then people were scrambling. Government of Ontario, for example, allowed producers that didn't have 5 acres to be able to sell directly from their location. So more of these industrial producers had some new opportunities to generate revenue. And that could be a change too. We don't know what's going to happen if some of those rules in place have been changed, and or if that type of, you know, industrial style brew pub that we see with beer could become a thing. We've seen one or two cideries make that shift. Who knows? So there's possibilities and changes there. But I do think that I think there are still opportunities going forward, but there is that bit of a plateau, and the rising costs of production have dramatically hurt the ability for cider producers to generate a bit more capital to reinvest. We know, you know, the price of apples in some parts of Canada went up 30, 40, 50%. Glass has been incredibly difficult to get. Cardboard prices have gone up by quite a lot. Everybody moved to cans, and cans have become very difficult to be able to get in Canada. So all of those sort of adding together, plus the general labor shortages, plus the cost of transportation, have put a crunch on the overall revenue lines, which we know cider, when it comes to revenue per product sold, has a much thinner margin than beer, than spirits, and wine as a whole. So they're already starting off selling with smaller margins, and those have shrunk. So I think that's also kept a couple people out of the industry, or have seen a couple of sales happen here or there for those changes.
Can I add a little bit more on the positive side? So we don't scare too many people away. In volatile markets, it's sometimes when we get the biggest outliers and the biggest companies. So definitely, you're not starting this business for 5 years, right? This is a business that you want to build, ideally, for the rest of your life, 20, 30 years. So it may be right now volatile and new and difficulties, but in 10 years, if you keep going, a lot of people are going to come in and out of the market. So it definitely is, if it's something that you want to plant and be investing into for the long run.
And I would say that two really interesting trends. One is people who have made cider and are getting towards their retirement age and say, well, I think I can do this. This seems like a really good opportunity and something that keeps me connected. So we've seen some of that. We've also seen, I lived and worked in the city at a desk, a corporate job, Sucked the soul out of us. So we went off and bought a farm and started having a family and are making cider from wild found apples. and both of those are decently common. I would say I've had a chance to visit maybe 100, 125 cideries. And I'd say a good 2 to 3 dozen have that story, that it was time to get out, time to reconnect with, you know, what Canada offers, which is a great growing location for some apples, and a possibility to be away from the city life that they didn't look at anymore. So there's some of those angles as well.
Can we expect to see you in CiderCon this year?
Yep. So I'm happy that we'll be leading a contingency of Canadian cider producers down. My understanding, there's around a dozen or so that are coming from different places across the province and the country. We have a meet and greet happening on February the 1st for the cider producers at the conference itself. And we're still in details of trying to figure out if we're participating in the Cider Share or we're doing our own event. I have a plan of action. I'm trying to get final confirmation from the Chicago Cider Week to be part of that formally. But it does look like, fingers crossed, we'll have half a dozen Canadian ciders available for Americans and other cider makers to be able to try at an event. and you know, be participating in all the things that CiderCon offers, from at least my perspective, which is not a cider producer, but more in the industry. So I'm really excited to be able to meet and connect with a lot of people, because this will be my first one for sure.
Anything else that you would like to add before we wrap up?
Not too much. I would highly suggest that if you haven't tried a variety of Canadian ciders before, you start looking for something that's not popular, not available at the liquor store, not found at a high-end sporting event type thing, try something a little different. My sort of interesting go-to when I tell people is, if the percentage on the can or the bottle ends in a 0.5 usually, maybe try something that's got an odd number to it. Because usually what that means is it's not as processed, and it's going to give you a chance to really try something that's local and deeper and craft. And you know, we have some incredibly large companies that are producing millions of liters of cider, but they're really craft ciders, very, very good stuff as well. So you know, go out and try a bunch as possible. And I would say also try not to keep it too long in the fridge or on the shelf. That's been my problem. I've got some stuff that is a couple years old now, and it's not where it should be. So be mindful of how much you order all at once is the other tip I would have.
Incredible. Thank you, Barry. Thank you so much. I think it was packed with a lot of information, and maybe in the future we'll have to segment that and go deeper into one or two of those topics. But I think it's going to be very valuable for a lot of cider makers.
Excellent. So thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me on. And if you do want more information, info@cidercanada.com is the email address as well.
Thank you. Have a good night. Thank you, Barry.
Thank you. Bye now.